Hey there, and welcome to another episode of Analytics Neat. I'm your host, Bill Bruno. For those of you that might be new here, Analytics Neat is a weekly podcast. It comes out every Monday. I tend to cover media, marketing, analytics, technology, and data, and I do it in a short format to try to make it something easy for you to digest and then move on with your day. I also love interacting with all of you, so you can reach out to me directly on Twitter, at Bill Bruno, using the hashtag AnalyticsNeat. You can also give the podcast a follow, at AnalyticsNeat on Twitter as well. So if you have any ideas, topics, questions, concerns, hit me up, and I'd love to chat. And whether you're an avid listener of the podcast or you're new here and you like what you happen to be hearing, then please rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you prefer. If I'm not on a platform that you prefer to listen to, let me know and we'll try to figure that one out too. So let's go ahead and jump right in. Thanks for joining me for another week here. Hope everybody is still staying safe. Again, if you need anything at all, if you need help getting groceries, if you need masks, let me know. I can route you to the right people or help you myself. I was pretty excited this weekend seeing that they're at least going to open up golf courses here in Chicago as of May 1st, although I saw some courses were opening today as well. So that'll be fun. I'm going to have to dust off my walking cart, adhere to the regulations. I don't care. I'll jump through hoops just to be able to get outside for a bit and hit a few golf balls. This week, we've also got a little too personal award to give out. We've given out a lot more of these this year. I feel like there's a lot more privacy awareness, so you just see a lot of stuff popping up. Although this one's a bit funny. I've promised not to name names. I don't want to shame anybody here on the podcast, but let's just say that there are two friends of mine living in Texas who happen to be avid neaters who have been talking about how doing push-ups, you know, because everybody's stuck at home, so you're creating these home gyms. I've done the same thing, picked up some TRX bands, things like that, just to try to keep my sanity here while we're stuck at home. So anyways, these two friends of mine, both were saying that they've been doing push-ups and that it was hurting their wrists. So naturally, I made fun of their weak wrists. We had a few text messages back and forth. And then there you have it. I log into Instagram the next day and I'm scrolling through and what do I see? It's an apparatus that you can attach to your forearm and wrist and hand and use it to strengthen your wrist, which obviously I sent to those guys. But that's just a little too personal for my liking, because I didn't Google wrist machines. I didn't do anything. It was just a text message conversation about weak wrists, and there you have it. So hopefully those guys can pick those up. I really hope, and thoughts and prayers out to their wrists during this trying time. So in other news, Google has made some waves with regards to ad identification for individuals or organizations who are putting advertising into the space. Now, some of you might have already been aware that back in 2018, Google made all political ads verify themselves. And so what they're doing basically is expanding that to everyone, which is a solid move. Although for organizations that maybe aren't aware of it or out in front of it, it's going to require a bit of paperwork and some steps here to be able to even advertise with Google going forward. So it's trying to basically prevent people from misrepresenting themselves. And it also, they're planning on showing consumers which country or origin the ad is running from. So you'll be able to click, why am I seeing this ad? You'll see information about the ad. Is it verified as an individual? And what country they're located in that this ad is originating from. So some of this, as I read a bit further, was a result of the various COVID-19 vaccines and other scams and all of these things that are circulating the web. It also might have something to do with that fake doctor that we call a president who is telling us all to try Lysoling ourselves as well. But existing advertisers, in short, will have about 30 days once they've been notified to complete the verification process. And it's going to be rolled out in phases. So there's a time to submit documents. Once those documents have been submitted, then there's an in-account identity check to confirm that they're legitimate. And organizations will be required to submit like legal information as well, W-9, IRS documents, so on and so forth, employer identification number. And so all of this is designed to better inform and be more upfront about where these ads are originating from. Are they verified? Are they actually coming from the organization that is advertising or being mentioned in those advertisements? And it's a great move, I think, for transparency, just to help try to eliminate a lot of the fake news, a lot of the scams, so on and so forth. And let's not pretend that these scams haven't been going on for a very long time. I mean, we've had chain mails and stuff going all the way back to the AOL days, just that they're more sophisticated, more confusing, and they're swaying a lot of things and a lot of people's opinions on things just when they read them and assume that they're true. And that brings us to the last topic of the undercard this week. It's a company called Stripe. For those of you that are not familiar, this is a payment app that's popular for online businesses. It builds the connection between those paying and the organizations receiving that money. Used a lot in the startup community from what I've read and dug into. And Anitor shared a blog with me where the author was quite shocked that Stripe was capturing data across the entire website that this individual had built. And there was an entire write-up about the investigation that this person did, the code that was uncovered, the responses from Stripe, so on and so forth. Now, the neater that shared this with me knew about something called legitimate interest, and that was the crux of not only sending this email my way to talk about, but also around the non-issue that the author of this blog had highlighted. I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with legitimate interest, but in essence, as I read through the blog, this person was quite unhappy that that Stripe was being deployed across the website and that Stripe was capturing a lot of information across all pages, not just necessarily the payment confirmation page. So legitimate interest is something that it gets talked about, but maybe not enough. And that has to do with GDPR, CCPA, and otherwise. And basically what the crux of the issue here is that for fraudsters or online fraud to happen, if you opt out of personalization and tracking, it makes it more difficult to identify that it's online fraud. You'd expect that, right? There's less information being captured about that particular session. If this is an account takeover attempt or a new account being created from someone fraudulent or so on and so forth, if you're not capturing that data in real time, you're not going to necessarily be able to identify that. So legitimate interest basically states that if you could keep the marketing data set and a fraud data set completely separate, that you don't have to give people the option to opt in or opt out to the fraud data stream. And that's what Stripe is doing here. They're capturing a ton of information about the behavior, and they're using it for fraud identification purposes, which is completely legal, but something that has not been educated enough in the industry. Obviously, Stripe needed to be more clear in their privacy policies just to help people understand that. But in essence, it's keeping the marketing data completely separate from the fraud data. Now, the value here is that you have a much richer data set to try to stop digital fraud, account takeovers, so on and so forth. But the challenge is that you need to be able to keep that data set completely separate. You can't be using the same data set for fraud that you are for marketing, because then you might have situations where someone that had opted out of the marketing data set, you know, ultimately is all of that behavioral data is feeding into the fraud data set. And that's going to be a potential sticking point. And so there needs to be a lot more education, I think, on these concepts. There also needs to be a high level of accountability for organizations to stick with the letter of the law on this and to keep that wall between marketing data with opt-in, opt-out privileges and fraud data that avoids the need to have an opt-in, opt-out scenario. But we need this. Digital fraud is one of the biggest and most important challenges, not only in the financial sector, but in the online marketing and online retail community as well. And so things need to be done like this to be able to try to get out in front of that and to stop all the hassle that happens when fraud is impacting an individual or a business, you know, across their websites, their mobile apps, so on and so forth. So that wraps up the undercard. Let's jump into this week's main event. Comes from the Harvard Business Review. I saw some tweets about this, decided to dig a little deeper. I was curious what the article was about. It was all around digital transformation. And they had done a survey of directors, CEOs, senior executives, and the number one concern of 2019 was digital transformation. Then they went on to state that 70% of all digital transformation initiatives do not reach their goals, and that of the $1.3 trillion with a T dollars that was spent on digital transformation in 2019, it was estimated that about $900 billion of that went to waste. Those are massive numbers. So 70% of digital transformation, you know, initiatives don't reach their goals. They're wasting almost $1 trillion out of the gate. So why do they fail? From my perspective, I thought I'd delve into a few different thoughts around this. Harvard Business Review had a nice write-up about this. I'm going to call attention to a couple of things that they mentioned. But I found this shocking. I spend a lot of time talking about true digital transformation and what that means. And that's just something that caught my eye. I think the first thing out of the gate that comes up to me is the wrong technology. Either an organization is blindly loyal to a particular vendor, is using technology, you know, square peg round hole phenomenon that happens where you try to take a technology and expand it to do other things that aren't core to that technology. And as a result, you undercut whatever you're trying to do from a digital transformation perspective. I think silos are another thing that pop up for me that are top of mind. Again, you're making decisions in a silo for a particular business unit, or you have someone who's the squeaky wheel in a particular silo, or someone who frankly just has high regard from the higher ups in his or her particular silo and is able to drive decisions from their requirements that don't necessarily line up across the enterprise. And so not being able to knock down those silos or having duplicate technologies in place because of those silo decisions always seem to come together as well. Here's another one that comes to mind for me, and it's around mobile. It's the most important channel. It's the channel that most organizations struggle with. And it just so happens that in most large enterprise organizations, it's a bit of a kingdom in and of itself, or a fiefdom, if you will, within the larger enterprise. And so the mobile teams don't tend to have to answer to the same people. They kind of can go make their own decisions, so on and so forth. I think wrong investments come into this, and that kind of coincides with poor strategy. If you go the wrong path, if you believe something from a particular vendor technology, you do that square peg round hole phenomenon that I mentioned before, or if you're not looking far enough into the future or thinking more aggressively around what you could do to bring true digital transformation to your organization, then you're likely to go down the wrong paths. The problem when you go down the wrong paths and spend money doing it is that your budget the next year is not going to look the same. And you've eaten away from your existing budget as well if you decide you need to pull a 180 or pivot in some way, shape, or form. I think the underpinning of everything that you do for digital transformation comes down to data. And if you have a lack of ability to trust the data, if you don't have a way of capturing the granularity of data at an individual level that you need from digital channels, and you don't have the ability to link that with your other first-party data sets, and you don't have a plan for that, then you're already out of the gate with a poor strategy, and you're already putting your faith in the wrong vendors. I think similarly, this comes together, and this is kind of in line with silos, in my opinion, but decisions by committee. If you have a bunch of people trying to align on a decision and not one person that can kind of sit above that, look at the trees from far away and make a decision for the business, and instead you're trying to get everyone to agree, you're going to waste a lot of time. You're going to build up a lot of political issues. You're going to have to jump over a ton of red tape. In my opinion, it's kind of like having co-CEOs. It just can't happen. You have to have somebody who ultimately can make the decision. Otherwise, you're going to spin your tires on again and over and over and over, just trying to get to a very simple decision that probably should have been made months ago. Another point that comes up, and Harvard Business Review calls attention to this as well, is around the big consulting firms. You bring in these big strategy consulting firms, these big digital transformation consulting firms, and they come in and they try to define your strategy, and there goes the budget. It costs a lot of money to bring those suits together and get those into your organization. And I think that's a big part of the issue, is some of this is not that difficult to define. You don't necessarily need a six-month project to get a document to tell you what digital transformation should look like for your organization. But when you do that, it ends up taking up a ton of budget, a ton of time, and by then people have moved on to other things, or they've started to piecemeal together various activities or use cases that would have been part of your larger strategy. It just took too long for you to get there. The final point I want to bring up from Harvard Business Review, in my opinion, is one of the key ones, and it comes down to people. They gave a lesson in their article where they said, recognize employees' fear of being replaced. And I think this is really important, not just necessarily because digital transformation could threaten their jobs, as Harvard Business Review outlines, but I think that a lot of people are afraid to admit they were wrong, or afraid that they selected the wrong technology, or went the wrong path, or spent more money than they should, or aren't happy with the output coming from a vendor or a consulting firm that they've chosen to bring on board. And so instead, you keep going down the path, right? But unfortunately, you're just digging yourself a deeper hole. But that fear, that emotion, the cultural element, the people fearing for their jobs and not wanting to be replaced, or not feeling comfortable enough to admit that a poor decision was made, are all things that factor in to why organizations do spin their wheels. I've seen so many organizations over the years. Just keep going down a path because, and I quote, well, we already told our bosses that this is what we're doing. I have heard that so many times from the consulting world and over my years in that world. And this is, I cannot stress enough how massively important it is to have more open communication, to foster a culture of innovation, and foster a culture that allows for organizations to pivot and welcomes it. You know, challenge ideas, challenge constructs, challenge vendors. If it's not a fit for the organization and your needs will change over time, so that's okay, then don't be afraid to admit it's time to move on or look elsewhere. So with that, we'll go ahead and put a bow on this week's episode of Analytics Neat. Again, thank you so much for listening. Really appreciate the Neaters who have created a ton of content for me or submitted content to me over the last few weeks. Please keep that coming. Please subscribe on your favorite platform. And if you do have a moment as you subscribe, please leave a review as well. 5 stars would be appreciated. We'll be back again next Monday, folks. And until then, have a great rest of your week.